Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
It's McNeil and Parkins. I'm not Parkins. I'm Spiegel, because that man's on paternity leave. We get rolling now with the great Chris Tannehill.
How do you feel about an adventure beyond all maps?
We could go, you and I,
where no one's ever been before.
Dan McNeil, Danny Parkins.
Here we go!
Afternoons on The Score.
Spiegs doing play-by-play for the Cubs and Mariners on the first of the month, just a couple of weeks away. I want to hear the verb laced. I've already stuffed the suggestion box.
It's a nice call.
With that for you, stay away from anything that might lead one to believe you're a fan of Chip Carey.
High drive, base hit!
Curious about that home run call, and I don't know, you know, you said you'll think about it. I hope you do more than think about it.
Yeah.
I hope you do it in the shower. The home run call, that is.
Thank you. Thank you for that wish.
I can picture you all in the shower, soaping up.
This texture says, Speaks home run call. Going,
Cod! What a shot! Tributes, potentially, to guys you admired.
Brockmire?
Do a little, that is gondola.
Of fictional baseball broadcasters, Harry Doyle is far and away my favorite. Bob Uecker's character.
I don't know how this guy keeps his mind on baseball with all the paternity suits and all.
I always think of that moment in Naked Gun, the panel, they're introducing all the broadcasters.
Hello, everybody. I'm Kurt Gowdy, along with Jim Palmer, Tim McCarver, Dick Vitale, Mel Allen, Dick Emberg, and Dr. Joyce Brothers, inviting you to join us for this all-important ball game.
Yo! Saddle up, lock and load.
The McNeil and Parkin Show, afternoons 2 to 6 on 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago's sports station.
He's the goods, and we can confirm that was the first Naked Gun movie. 670 The Score is where you are. Thank you, Chris Tannehill. Nick Shepkowski on the other side of the glass as well. McNeil and Parkins, lots to do today. 240, Mark Lazarus from The Athletic will talk Blackhawks big picture with us, Dan McNeil, because they've got some awkward decisions that you think they might need to make, and a lot of people are talking about it, actually.
It's watershed time for the Blackhawks. They have to decide what they're going to be short-term and long-term. The trading deadline is right around the corner. The white flag has been waved on this season. I already had done that when they were in Western Canada. Last night was just confirmation for those who went to the game, those of you who did and you saw that exhibition. It was another embarrassing night. And you come around to the idea that we talked about this yesterday, Speaks, how sad it is that Patrick Kane has been playing the best hockey of his life the last year and a half.
Yeah.
And the reality is sitting there. Do you wind up trying to move him, to get him to waive his no-trade clause?
Fire your GM.
Well, there's other things, but that is part. I think everything's on the table. The GM losing his job is certainly a possibility.
It should happen. It should absolutely happen. His handpicked coach is a disaster, as proclaimed by the players themselves. About to miss the playoffs for the third straight year. You look around the league, and in this hard cap league, there are other franchises who have done much better jobs of reloading, of getting the right guys to take contracts that keep your situation manageable. Just because you have those two guys getting older and being expensive, and Duncan Keith is expensive and getting older, doesn't mean that you have to suck.
Yeah, you got a lot of money tied up in defensemen who were really good 5 years ago, six years ago, 7 years ago. I've got to pick a game to get to real soon. In the event there is radical change, I want to see 88 in that sweater one last time.
Oh, man.
I want to see 19 wearing that sweater one last time. And I want to see Duncan Keith.
Yeah, what is he doing? You're putting that out there. They can't trade Kane. You can't.
What I'm saying is these are conversations they're going to have. Mm. You have to, sometimes you got to get worse before you get better.
I know all about that. We've talked about it with other franchises.
I'm not saying I want them to do it. I'm saying it's something they're going to discuss. Just as the Cubs, who didn't get to the playoffs last year, had to have conversations and likely still are on who their manager says is their best player, Chris Bryant.
Here's the only way that those conversations should happen is if Stan Bowman's not a part of them. And just go ahead. He should not be a part of those conversations if they're going to do it. Because he's the biggest problem to me. He's absolutely the biggest problem.
You know what he did well? He was the Kenny Williams, even though he won cups as a result of it, he was a guy who was capable of finding peripheral players later in their careers to provide. Johnny Oduya was one of them. Just face-off guys.
Yeah, he had that for a while. Well, guess
Antoine Vermette coming up with big playoff games for the Hawks during their golden years.
Well, and he's still good at finding guys. Artemi Panarin was an unbelievable find on his part, but then he stupidly traded him away. Kubalik is a top six forward that he has found.
Kubalik's been good.
He's got 25 goals now, 23 even strength goals, most of anybody on the team. That's a find. So he's good at those kind of things, but he just hands out money to people when they don't necessarily need the money handed to them.
Some of that money goes way back to Dale Tallon, too. Dale Tallon, while he did a great job building this core, handicapped them from a money standpoint.
Yeah,
terribly.
But we've talked about it, and we can talk about it and some more with Laz. That was an ugly showing last night. Now I'm ready for the Bulls' ugly showing tonight. Here we go. Baseball starts Saturday.
You're taking Ruben, your son. You're taking Christine, your wife.
Yeah.
Who else is in attendance in Team Spiegel?
The two stepdaughters. So we are a five-pack. So the five-pack of us all going there tonight. Very much.
How much basketball will you actually watch? Your son doesn't like it, you said yesterday.
Not a big fan of the professional sports, is he? Not really. Doesn't like to.
That's okay.
You know why? You know why it is. The professional sports are the opponent in terms of daddy's attention. This is the issue.
Oh boy.
This is the issue. Hang out with me. No, I'm going to watch the baseball game. What is this damn baseball game?
He also is getting he's old enough now at 8 to know what it is to have a celebrity father. And many kids of celebrities repel. They want, not all, but many kids react this way. I've talked about this with my therapist, want nothing to do with a life that resembles them because they live in your shadow. They see sports. They think of dad. They think of guys fawning on dad.
It's possible. I understand. Well, he also says he likes music and plays piano well for his little piano lesson, but he says, Daddy, I'm not going to be like you. I'm not going to be on a stage. You know, so he doesn't want to do the things that I do. That is fair. That's fine. It's a big, exciting world out there. Choose some other stuff, kid. I'll encourage that.
This little piano. You kind of were dismissive of piano.
Oh, I didn't mean to be. It's the most important instrument you could learn. It is. It's percussion and melody together, Dan McNeil. But I'm saying, that's interesting. Yeah. So, I mean, maybe he will rebel against all of that. And so there's a chance. Anyway,
you've been doing very good on your intake food-wise. The United Center is a great place to have food relapse.
Right? That's what I've been promising him.
Are you prepared for it? Are you going to... You're brown bagging it today?
You're saying it's going to be a...
Slam a healthy sandwich at 5:30 before you leave?
Tough to go carb-free over at the UC.
I think so.
Could I have a burger with no bun? Thank you. I could.
You know, are those chili cheese fries?
chili cheese fries, no fries.
no
I don't know.
Cheese, yeah.
That is a good spot. No, I've been teasing him with Benny. With Benny the Bull and with food options. But we'll watch a little bit of basketball.
Yeah.
It's nice of them to play it in front of us.
T-shirts will be shot from guns. That always entertains the youngsters.
Absolutely.
It's a carnival out there.
Uh-huh. Walk a few laps if the kid gets bored.
Popcorn, if he can't be amused by Benny and the popcorn trick.
See, is Benny still good? It's been a little while. I know we're on to like replacement Benny. We live in a post legit Benny
still
universe.
Does. The last Bulls game I went to, he did the popcorn.
He's just stealing
it on the jazz fan.
He's stealing
night.
The original Benny's bits, right? We've got a Benny tribute act going on.
We miss Dub Bull. That's who we miss.
You
remember that?
Partying
remember
Dub Bull? Dub Bull,
good old number 94. 95, I think. Or no, Dub Bull was 91.
Plate. You got a license plate on Dub Bull.
Dub Bull was 91. I thought he was 91.
How many pounds was he caught with?
But it was to designate their first championship. I'm pretty sure that's why Dub Bull. Right. How many pounds? Dub Bull was arrested with massive cannabis.
Yes. He's on the list. Do we have our list together?
95. 95 for Dub Bull.
I was right 95, the first time.
95 pounds a pot or 95?
It was both. It was the number to commemorate the pot.
Yeah, we got a list going here because this Greg Robinson, the Cleveland Browns tackle, former tackle, right? Busted with 157 pounds of pot. And you might think that's impressive, but Nate Newton gives that the shoe mechanic. He's unimpressed.
Child's play.
213 pounds for Nate Newton. Still the leader in the very smoky clubhouse for the NFLer with the most marijuana in his car.
Only 6 ounces for DeBull when he was arrested on January 21st, 2004.
You can't even distribute that.
God, you couldn't get...
How many pots have you smoked?
Couldn't get Bam Morris out of bed for that.
Right. Tim Worley wouldn't be caught dead.
There they are. Those are all the names. Dan Pasqua, got UPS for you.
Robert Parrish on line one wants to talk about FedEx. The maybe it wasn't Tim Worley. Have I been bus tossing Tim Worley with pot when it's Bam Morris?
Tim Worley had weed on him when he was arrested on
the highway.
Kennedy. Yeah. Get your motor running.
Yeah, I'm going to need a running list, Shep, if you could. I know you did some work for Mac of consequence.
Worley was traveling
NFL.
At a high speed on the Kennedy at 3 o'clock in the morning or something like that. You'll find that in your report.
Okay.
There's an article here from 94 in the Trib. The headline is just all I need to know. Worley's traffic arrest has Wanstead uneasy.
He got a
some
ticket.
Weed.
Hey, apparently.
Been drinking.
Wani is uneasy right now. He's got new parts. I got a new knee.
Yeah, he's got knee.
Turning into robot Wani.
Yeah. Well, so Wani's got a new knee.
Yeah, that's not an easy recovery. That's 3 months after it, having had a knee replacement, you feel better than you did for a long, long time. But during the first couple months, it will test your mettle.
Yeah.
It's not easy. That rehab, and you get both legs in shape, which in most people who have one knee issue usually have another one.
Mm.
He'll do all the treatment and he'll be fine.
Well, good.
Who pulls this up for you? Did you do that yourself?
Well, Mac, I want to talk with you when we come back about the news broke yesterday and there was some pushback from me and from others, but the more I think about it, the more I like it. We'll discuss that next at 670 The Score. McNeil and Parkins speaks in for Parkins on paternity leave.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first 3 orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
On the Score.
All right, you're watching parade coverage here on NFL Network. KSHB's coverage locally in Kansas City. Momentarily lost the audio, but you heard them talking about the mascot, Casey Wolf. That some idolize Casey Wolf. Don't know if I idolize him, but I do think he's a pretty cool wolf.
Wolf draft!
I'm taking Casey Wolf, number one overall. Hell of a mascot. Great public speaker in and out of uniform, we learned after the Kansas City Chiefs victory parade, Matt.
Not every organization allows its mascots to speak publicly. Some organizations have said over the years, we don't want to devalue the integrity of the mascot. Uh-huh. I tried to get an interview with the Mariner Moose once upon a time because I thought his ATV tricks at the King Dome in Seattle were absolutely outstanding. And the Mariner says, no, it's a moose.
He doesn't
speak. Talk to our moose. That compromises the integrity of our mascot.
That's amazing.
PR actually said that to us.
Denied you the moose.
Yes, yes.
You were daring.
Matt Fishman had a guy hang up a phone on
him. Well, it's not the first time he's been denied a moose.
No moose for you.
No. Moose again? Wow. Yeah. You know, maybe the wolf, maybe it should have gone Harvey Keitel. Harvey Keitel.
That's a good one.
Right? And if we are drafting wolves,
yeah.
At this point,
mm-hmm.
I'll go with Skates, Chicago Wolves mascot.
Wow,
man knows how to put on a show.
What an ass kisser you are!
Pick a wolf,
looking to sign that one day contract with the Wolves.
Right. $5,000 signing bonus for Shep.
Lindsay Wilhite, come on down.
Oscar Dansk.
You do the Oscar Dansk.
I saw Spiegel drop a puck.
You do the
there.
Oscar Dansk.
Drop a puck there.
I did drop a puck there 4 years ago today. As a matter of fact,
it popped
up on my Facebook. I dropped the puck. Thank you, Tanny. I was too heavy to reach down and grab it. Thank you, jackass. I know that's not what you meant, but I took it there. 4 years ago today, that was a wonderful experience. I have a Wolves sweater. They gave Ruben a little Wolves sweater, and he and I on the ice together dropping the puck at a hockey game.
Was that cool for him? Was that cool enough for him to be a part of opening puck drop ceremonies?
No, he expects it every time he goes to a
Father.
Game.
Father!
That's what he expects. That's what every sporting event is. Dad, where
Ruben
are we?
Parkins.
Why aren't we on the floor or the ice? No, seriously. Like,
Father!
One time I took him to a Cubs game, we're sitting in good seats, and Rizzo tossed him a ball. He's like, oh, this is what sports are now.
Right.
No,
right.
Kid.
Yeah, right.
Shut up.
Yeah.
Enjoy your stuff.
Those are the perks that you get, your kids get, and they think that's typical life, you know? I mean, I was in the upper tank going to games with my dad, and I was happy to be there, as I'm sure your son would be. But once they get a taste of it, the dessert cart becomes an expectation.
I don't think he's ever been in a suite, not as far as memory serves. But anyway, so yesterday when the NFL playoff news broke, Dan McNeil, I was like, man, another playoff team, and you, me, and Joe Ostrowski kicking around in 540. But the more I've thought about it, the more I like it. Two triple headers that first weekend for television is obviously why they did it, and that will be fun. One bye, I think, is actually okay. That one team, you know what? You're the best team in the conference, not the two of you. And the second, you're just a little bit better than third. One of you deserves
it. So all but two teams, one from each conference, have to win three playoff games to get to the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. And you know what? So just one of you gets a bye. And for the most part, that extra team last year would have been the Rams in the NFC and the Steelers in the AFC. I would have been okay with that. I don't think you're reaching a watered-down issue. I don't think you've gone far enough that you've ended up watered down. You haven't gone to eight where you have to expand to another weekend. I think it's okay. And I think having that extra playoff team is gonna be a motivation for more teams to think, you know what, why not us? Why can't we turn it around? And that's the way this league works.
Weeks 16 and 17 will carry far more weight. There will be way more interest in cities otherwise would have been, you know, conceding at that point. This format that's going to happen this year, effective now, would have had the Bears in the playoffs twice in recent years. They would have been a playoff team in 2011 when they went 8-8. They would have been a playoff team in 2012 when they went 10-6.
Wait a minute. Those are the last two Lovie years, right?
Yeah, they are. Lovie Smith probably would still be the head coach, and he would be on his 12th offensive coordinator by now.
Would he be back around to Ron Turner again? Would he have cycled back?
Still Ron Turner to me.
Wow, those 2 years would have been Bears years.
Yeah, would have been Bears playoff years under these rules that are going into effect immediately.
That means
I'm okay with it. I you know,
you understand what I'm saying about the big picture, that in an off season you're like, you know what, now there's seven playoff teams. There's one more. Why not us? And like, and even during the year, let's not, you don't have to entertain tank thoughts quite as much for a certain section of teams.
Yeah, no one tanks in the NFL. You know, compared to what the baseball playoff proposal was recently, the discussion of it, this is a wonderful idea by the NFL. This isn't that different. It's not bad. I don't think this is going to take any it's not going to take any getting used to it, period. I don't think for anybody. I think this is going to be accepted widely right out of the gate. Who's going to fight one more team from each conference?
I don't think anybody.
I will.
No. Why?
Yeah, well, that's what
because
you, Shep,
you're not
you
said deserving so. Of it. Look at the list that's printed out. How many of those teams are 8-8? How many of them on there in the last 10 years? Six of them. 8 win
two,
totals.
Three,
you
want to
reward a team
five,
that goes 500? Here's a playoff berth? Like the NFL, I mean, NFL and baseball are the closest to getting this thing entirely right. And it's okay, well, it means more meaningful regular season games. But it also takes away the importance of being good in the regular season.
You also got 5-10 win teams on this list that didn't get to the playoffs.
Cool. Do they
5-10 win teams?
Right, so this is good.
Were they in a division format then? Do they have divisions in the NFL in those 10 years?
Yes.
Then win your damn division. Well, take care of business at home first and then worry about not winning a wild card.
This list is the last 10 years, all the teams that would have been in, right, Mac?
Yep.
And you're saying there are 5 teams that are 8-8 and there are 5 10-win teams in there as
Chip
well.
Chip said 6 8-8s. I counted 5.
6 teams with 8 wins. I think a Vikings team went 8-7-1.
8-7-1. You're right.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that's an even split between what feels like a deserving team at 10-6 and what feels like perhaps a non-deserving team with 8 wins. For the most part, when we bitch about a team getting in the playoffs it doesn't deserve, it's like the 7-9 Seahawks several years
that's
back.
That's always
right?
going to be the standard. Softy Mahler's Seahawks.
Yeah.
Yes.
It, but so like it's a division winner that doesn't belong. Almost always we end up with at least one wild card team that we're like, yeah, they well, too bad for them.
Seattle has accomplished it twice, I'm pretty sure, where they've had a 7-9 and an 8-8, and I think both dates against the Bears. Wasn't the first time the Bears played the Seahawks in a playoff? They've had a couple of them. Wasn't that also a lousy? Because when you and I were working together, they played the historically worst Seahawks.
That was Cutler's, Cutler's playoff win.
Yes. 2010.
Yeah.
That's Cutler's only playoff win, right?
Yeah. The team that lost the Super Bowl the year before. Correct? Lost to Pittsburgh the year before. Then it was the Romo game that they won.
I'm thinking of the Bears' win over the Seahawks when Lovie Smith gave them an additional chance.
That's the
game
7-9.
That was the Romo game where he bobbled the snap, right?
All right. All right, I thought there was a second
one. I think you're right. I think you're right. That is, Shep, because the Bears just needed the one game to get to the NFC Championship game.
Yeah. I think that was the case.
That wouldn't be the case now. Only one team gets a bye. Got to earn your way in. Nick Shepkowski, play every damn week. Win your division. Win the conference.
I mean, there's as many 8-win teams on there as there are 10-win teams. And if you win 10 games and you don't win your division, like, okay, yeah, that sucks. Make making the playoffs special.
Well, there is a point where I agree with you that the attrition will be too much or that it will be watered down enough. I just don't think this is it. And it doesn't affect the overall structure of things and make it problematic either that front.
No, this is easy. Mm-hmm. This is a real easy change.
Like you think last year, that Steelers team, did you want to see them with their whichever quarterback they were playing with?
Devlin Hodges again? Devlin Duck Hodges.
Yes. I just had him for lunch. Bernstein bought it.
Delicious.
It was awesome.
By the way.
It was outstanding.
Yeah.
Duck. But like, did you want to see them in a playoff game? No. Like, I didn't need to see that.
Yeah, but I would have been okay seeing the Rams, who figured it out, who changed their offense on the fly, did Sean McVay after the league adjusted to him. I would have been okay with seeing them in there.
Yeah, and be bounced in the first round and forgotten about quickly.
You never know!
Those same Rams who scored 3 points in their last playoff game.
That's right.
The Super Bowl,
That's
Super
right.
Bowl 53. 3 points.
670, the score is where you are. We're a couple look-arounds at some baseball teams in our divisions, including with an old pal at 3 o'clock. But before that, let's check in on the big picture status of one of the winter tenants who seems like they are dead team walking. We'll do that next on the score.
We're not going to talk hockey forever. Don't worry.
Makes you angry because it's a game that we, you know, you look before like we need this game. And we didn't do the things right from the start to put ourselves in the best position to win. We just didn't have enough guys ready to play.
That is Jeremy Colliton talking about the anger that he feels or that he might feel if he showed you an emotion. Not sure.
That's emotional for Colliton.
That was it
right
there.
That's it, yes.
Well, made him angry last night to see 5 goals given up in the third period and a non-playoff team beaten by another non-playoff team over at the United Center. Mac, let's go to the Alpamonte Ford hotline, Alpamonte Ford in Melrose Park, and talk to an old friend I have not spoken to in a long time. From The Athletic, these days he is hockey Bigfoot Mark Lazarus joining us on the McNeil and Parkins Show with Spiegs in for Parkins. What's up, Mark?
No, not much. Just fending off the
pitchforks and torches on the internet.
Yeah, well, they are out there in full force. Let me start you with this. Is Stan Bowman going to survive this third straight non-playoff year?
I believe he is. I don't believe that he is in really danger of losing his job, whether you think he should or not. That's a separate discussion. But what's interesting is we haven't heard from Rocky Wirtz or John McDonough yet this season. And until we do, you know, I remember, 2 years ago when we were all Quenville or Stan were going to lose their jobs. And about a week before the season ended, John McDonough called a bunch of us down at a morning skate and said, hey, I want to let you know, Joel's staying, Stan is staying. We haven't heard anything like that yet. I talked to Stan Bowman in Calgary just a few days ago, and I asked him about Jeremy Colvin's job status. He said he thinks he's doing a fantastic job. He's in no danger. And I asked him about his own job status, and he said, I can't worry about that. I'm just trying to do the job I have now. I've got no indication that he's in any jeopardy. If things go really, really bad over the next 6 weeks, anything is possible. But if I were a betting man, I would bet on Stan Bowman still being GM come draft day.
Do you believe he deserves to be?
Well, I don't know. It's hard to say. When Joel Quenville was fired, I said the wrong person got it. That was much more Stan. That team was Stan Bowman's doing and not Joel Quenville's fault. Since then, he's done some good things. I know everybody wants to, you know, to gang up on him, and I get it. There's been a lot more misses than hits lately. The Yoki Haru trades to this day still baffles me, and I bring it up way too often. But, you know, the signings he made in the offseason, Calvin DeHaan was looking like a number one defenseman before he got hurt. Andrew Shaw is the kind of player they needed in this lineup. Now, you can look on the other side of that and say, well, Calvin DeHaan and Andrew Shaw never play full seasons. They're injury prone, and look what happened. They were wrong decisions. And, yeah, you can make that argument, too. I don't have like a hard I hate, you know, hedging on it. I don't have a hard feeling on this either way. I don't think Stan Bowman's done a great job of extending the window that this core had, but I'm not sure that anyone else could have either. With the way these contracts are set up, this was going to happen at some point. So I wish I had a harder opinion on it, but I really don't. I'm kind of ambivalent toward it because I think this is just the way it's going to be for a while.
I'm triggered last night by Artemi Panarin's existence and the goal and then the comments that he made after the game, kind of reiterating that he wanted to be here for life, that the trade shocked him. And we know how Patrick Kane felt about it at the time. As I look back and wonder about that, and I think Stan made a terrible mistake. Was it about chasing after Saad for Taves and trying to right that wrong of having traded Saad in the first place for Artem Anisimov? Was it about that? Because, or was it about the contract expectations eventually for Panarin? Because I think that was a terrible thing to trade Artemi away.
Well, let me preface this by saying that no matter what happened, Artemi Panarin would not be on the Blackhawks this year. There's no way the Blackhawks could have afforded a $12.5 million contract. And Panarin, he loved it here, but he wasn't going to take like $6 million. He wasn't going to take half market value to stay here. So that was the biggest reason that trade was made, was the cost certainty aspect, that Saad was signed for 2 more years than Panarin was. So it gave you a little more stability there. That trade was a massive overreaction. That one and the Nicholas Jalmerson trade were massive overreactions to that first round sweep against Nashville in the 2017 playoffs.
Yes.
Those trades expedited this process. You could have extended, but that team won 50 games. And they were a little bit smoke and mirrors, and Patrick Kane admitted that. It was one line. It was that Kane, Panarin, and Anisimov line, and it was Corey Crawford playing the best hockey of his life that season. But that was still a very good team. They were the number one seed, but they lost to the 8th seed in 4 games. They didn't score a goal. They scored like 1 or 2 goals in the last 3 games, and it was embarrassing, and they freaked out, and they made a bunch of trades. Look at it in hindsight. That Predators team was really good. They went to the Stanley Cup final that year and became a power. For a couple of years after that. That was kind of a changing of the guard moment. But the Blackhawks overreacted to one really bad week. They had a bad week where the offense just got shut down. It happens. It's hockey. It's a stupid game, and things like that happen. The team overreacted to that. They felt they had to do something because it's the Blackhawks. You can't let that stand. Stan Bowman gave his press conference after the season, which was a little awkward as he was trying to find it. You know, you talk about Colleton doesn't show emotion. Well, neither does Stan. And if they try to, it comes across as forced and awkward, and it's just not the way they operate, and that's not their fault, really. But they overreacted to that one bad week, overreacted. And they could have extended this window 2 more years. You could have basically kept that team together with Panarin and Kane for 2 more years. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, then you lose him. He wasn't signing here. He was not going to be a Blackhawk this year, no matter what. You can't have Kane at $10.5 million, Taves at $10.5 million, and Panarin at $13 million or whatever he's getting right now. It's just not realistic. But you could have gotten two more years of a very, very good team. And this would have been the first year of that retooling transition instead of the third.
And that's why I end up as frustrated with Stan Bowman and ready for him to go as I am today, because it re-triggers me. And it's not just the Seabrook contract, you know, it's not just those kind of things. And look, he's good at finding the Teuvo Teravainens, at finding Panarin in the first place, at finding Kubalik. It's a very nice find. Seems to be a top six
Strom
forward.
Has been a good addition.
Yeah, you know? So he's good at finding those guys. But those trades are just absolutely horrific. And I look around, they're better in Pittsburgh and Boston and places like that at building around their guys. What else have they been better at as they've extended windows than Stan has been? What else have those teams and those organizations been better at, Mark?
Well, I mean, their top guys don't make the money that Kane is. I mean, with the timing of those Kane and Taves contracts were rough because everyone's expecting this new TV deal to kind of inject all this money into the system and raise the cap by a ton. And then the Canadian dollar plummeted, and all of a sudden the cap was kind of flat. You know, Sidney Crosby is making 8.7, and, you know, Patrice Bergeron is on a bargain contract. These guys aren't making $10 million a year. So that's part of it. But they've also struck jackpots. They've had, you know, Boston's got Charlie McAvoy and David Pastrnak on you know, entry-level and cheap deals. And that's what the Blackhawks are doing now with Boqvist and particularly Jock, Kubalik. But the problem is they're doing it. They had 3 years before they were really able to do that. And that's the dilemma with Stan Bowman. Is look how good the scouting department is. Their picks hit. Kirby Dach was a surprising pick. Nobody had them taking Kirby Dach. Everybody had them taking Bowen Byram or Alex Turcotte. Well, look who's the best pick in the draft right now. It's Kirby Dach. So, and the European scouting department has done a terrific job from Cahoon to Kubalik to Panarin to Erik Gustafsson. They keep finding these guys. So the scouting department does a good job. They are hamstrung by some seriously heavy contracts. And that's self-inflicted. The Brent Seabrook contract, the second it was announced, every single one of us was like, oh, my God, you signed him for what? For how long?
Yeah.
Everybody knew this.
Yeah.
So a lot of this is self-inflicted, and they're doing the best they can. And you know, you talk about being able to build around it. Well, that's what Stan did in 13 and 15. People don't give him credit for those Stanley Cups. He had his fingerprints. Everyone wants to say, oh, they're Dale Talon's Cups. They're not. He did a really good job of finding the pieces around it, but he hasn't been able to do it for 4 years now. So, yeah, it's a concern, you know, and his job, John McDonough and Rocky Wirtz should be taking a long, hard look at the pros and the cons of Stan Bowman's tenure right now. I don't think he's going to get fired. I don't even necessarily think he should get fired. I think he's done a decent job since Joel Quenneville's firing. If Joel Quenneville had this roster, I'd be interested to see what he could do with it.
Mark Lazarus from The Athletic with us for another few minutes on The Score, Sports Radio 670. I'm Max Biggs, is in for Parkins today. Laz, sorry to interrupt you there, by the way. During the three cup years, the Blackhawks had power play issues even then. They hadn't been great at that. But this year is a new level of low. And when I hear an ex-player like Patrick Sharp indict Alex DeBrincat, I got to think it must be very much on his shoulders, as some others have indicated. Why in the hell has he been in a 14, 16-week slumber?
I wish he was just he knew. The shots are still there. He's actually shooting more than he did last year. He's not like he's going to some kind of shell and just giving up on life out there. He's trying. It's just not happening for him. I don't know what the answer there is. They finally took him off of PP1 and moved him down to PP2. They put Dominic Kubalik up on the top unit, who's got that huge shot, probably the best shot on the team. And it's been better since then. It's looked better, but they're still not scoring. I don't know what the answer is. I mean, back in those cup years, it was the same problem where they stand around, they get too cute, they force feed Kane, they just give the puck to Kane and sit back and wait for him to do something, and there's no movement on the power play at all. Back then, it didn't matter because they were so good at everything else. They were the best penalty killing team. They had great goaltending. They had three scoring lines and a great fourth line. They had amazing defensemen. They don't have that now. So the power play is this huge glaring hole where, God, if they just had a mediocre power play this year, if they were middle of the pack instead of dead last, they'd be in a playoff spot right now. So yeah, DeBrincat has to bear some of that burden. Kane has to bear some of that burden. I mean, honestly, you look at it, DeBrincat's on the same power play pace he was on last year. It's the 5-on-5 where the goals aren't coming. So it's not even that. Gustafsson and Boqvist haven't been able to move the puck the way they were moving it last year when they were, you know, scoring at like a 40% clip. It's baffling. It's inexplicable how basically the same people can have a 40% clip for 2 months and now can go over, it feels like, the last 6 months on the power play. It's that fickle nature of hockey where something that's just inexplicable, and it's maddening. because the talent wise, they've got plenty of talent on those power play units that they should be an effective group. And they're just not. They just stand around and do nothing.
Not good. What do you think is most likely for the trade deadline? What are they most likely to do here?
Well, I think Eric Gustafson had, I mean, defensemen are going, they're fetching a premium so far this trade deadline, and Gustafson might be the best of the bunch in terms of offensive potential. So I think they're going to have to trade him. And I wonder about the goalies. I mean, the concern about trading one of the goalies is that they're the two best goalies on the rental market. Crawford's a two-time champion who's playing great. Lehner has been slumping this past month, but he's obviously got a great track record. The problem is you don't know if you're going to be able to sign. You have to sign one of them for next year. And if you trade one and then you can't sign the one you keep, what happens? If you trade Leonard now with the hope that you can sign him again in the summer, but he says, screw that, I don't want to do that, then you're just left there with, you know, Colin Delia and Kevin Lankinen or some guy off the scrap heap. That's trouble, because goaltending has been the best thing this team's had. That's maybe the best goaltending duo in the league. And if you put some rookie goaltender behind this defense, this team defense gives up 37 shots a game, you're not contending next year. So this is a very big question they have to answer, is which of these goalies are they going to be able to keep next year, because they probably can't keep both. To also look at, you know, maybe Dylan Strome, Brandon Saad. I mean, they've lost 7 of 8 games. A week ago, I would have said, don't trade any of them. Play it out. But the way things are now, you have to consider every possibility that comes your way for Stanmore.
Yeah, that Western Canada thing was a disaster. Mark, thanks a bunch. Always enjoy it. Take care, man.
Anytime, guys.
That's Mark Lazarus from The Athletic, the Dickie Dunn of our local sports writers. If it's happening with the Hawks, he's on it.
The bottom of the hour was brought to you by Northwestern Football. Coach Fitz and Northwestern Football return to Wrigley Field on November 7th as they host Wisconsin. Guarantee a ticket to this matchup with the purchase of season tickets. Buy now at nusports.com. And this segment is brought to you by Kenosha Subaru. Down the river where we send our sewage to St. Louis. They have a baseball team, and apparently they have their version of Score House. Let's crap on both of them next on The Score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.